Thank you. Well, it's good to be here this morning. Can I take this off here? Okay. Well, some of you, like Harry, have met me before, and some of you know me, but most of you don't. So you've heard a little bit of who I am, but I'll tell you a bit more, and certainly tell you about Youth with a Mission, which is the organisation I work with. This morning, I want to tell you about part of Europe that I've worked in for a long time. And really, what I'd want to leave you with is a connection to those countries, really. A connection that perhaps wasn't there before I spoke, and leave them on your hearts. So that's what I'm hoping for this morning. Well, Youth with a Mission, that's who I'm a volunteer with. And everyone that is with Youth with a Mission is a volunteer. None of us receive a salary. We live by faith. It was started, YWAM, that's what we call it for short. YWAM was started about 50 years ago by a young man called Lauren Cunningham. He saw a vision of waves breaking onto the seashore. And when he realized, actually, these waves weren't just made of water, but these waves were waves of young people breaking onto the shores of different countries. And at the time, 50 years ago, the idea of using young people in missions was quite radical. But that's what he sensed God was speaking to him, to use young people as a mission force. And since then, that's literally what Youth with a Mission has been doing. So we facilitate young people into short-term missions, but not just that. Sort of longer-term missions, unlike myself, long-term missions. I've been, as Kerry said, in YWAM now for about 24 years. And altogether, all over the globe, at any one time, there's probably about 17,000 YWAMers. And that includes a lot of short-termers who are just there for a few months, but as I said, it includes people too, like myself, who've been around forever. So we're just about everywhere on the globe, really. So that's a little bit about YWAM, a little bit about myself. I'd always felt as though God was going to call me into some sort of service. I had no idea what that would look like. I had no idea when. But ever since my teens, when I became a Christian, I felt as though I wanted to serve God. I wanted to do something that would literally change the world. That was what was in my heart. And then when I was in my 20s, I felt God say, "The time is now. I'm calling you." And again, I had no idea. What did that look like? I didn't even know what I had to offer, really. I was obviously not like some major speaker. I wasn't some incredible preacher. It wasn't obvious to me what I had to offer. But as I said, I just wanted to serve God. And I trusted him that he would find a place for me to serve, really. Now, in my own denomination, it was, you know, the classic thing would be you go to Bible school and do 3 years, and after 3 years, you sort of were allowed to go and serve somewhere, probably teaching in a Bible school somewhere. And I just didn't want to do 3 years at a Bible school. That, to me, just felt like it would kill me off, really. And so I started to look for another organization, perhaps, that would take you with less training. And that's how I came across Youth with a Mission, because you just need to do 6 months training and literally they'd release you on the world. And so that really was my initial reason for going to YWAM. But afterwards, I realized that actually the mission suited me very well. And I first went out to Kenya and Tanzania. And actually, when I felt God say Kenya, Tanzania, I just thought, oh, classic, I should have known. You know, that's probably where all good missionaries go, isn't it? Somewhere to Africa. But, you know, actually, that wasn't my long-term call. And although I am called to missions long-term, that really wasn't what God intended for me, one place forever and ever, which is what I thought it would look like. And he has really taken me on a journey, and I've learned to understand my gifts more. And I've learned to understand that I am someone to facilitate other people, to get things going, to organize, which doesn't sound very exciting. But that's really, those are some of my gifts anyway, some of my strengths. And when God called me to Albania, you know, again, it wasn't somewhere that was particularly on my radar, but I went there to do some training with the staff, and people said to me, why don't you pray about coming back here? And I thought, well, I don't know. I was actually thinking of going somewhere else, because I did know I should be... I'd spent quite a few years in just training our young people, training people into missions, taking short-term teams, but I did know God was saying to go somewhere more long-term. And actually, at that point, I'd been to India many times, and I thought that probably was where I was going to go. But when they asked me to pray about going to Albania, again, you know, it's that sense of just opening up to God and never knowing what he's going to say to you. And although it wasn't on my radar, God actually spoke to me very strongly that Albania was the place I should go. And so I went. And yes, 9 years I was there, and it was an incredible 9 years. And Julian has been out several times, being on our board there. And yeah, a place where I might mention a little bit more, but certainly there was no church. And we've seen the church established there. It's still very young, but it's happening. And that was very exciting. And God took me into this part of Europe, and that's where I've been ever since. I was asked to, after being in Albania, to oversee the work for Youth with a Mission in Central Europe. And I now live in Hungary because it's far more central to be able to travel around from. In Albania, it's very, very difficult to travel to anywhere, really. So that's why I'm now in Hungary. So let me show you these nations. Ta-da. Thank you. I'll tell you which countries they are because you might not be able to see from where you are. But it's Poland, Czech Republic, Slovakia, Hungary, Slovenia, Croatia, Bosnia, Serbia, Montenegro, Romania, Bulgaria, Kosovo, Macedonia, Albania, and Greece. I'm sorry about this, but Greece is a lot bigger. You can see there, it's fallen off the edge, unfortunately. But those are the countries that I continually travel around. They're my permanent focus at this time. As you see, there are 15 countries. Kosovo is not necessarily recognized by every country in the world, and for those who don't recognize it, it's not a country, it's a United Nations protectorate. Very strange status to have, but there you have it. There's 25 YWAM locations in those countries and 160 staff. That might sound like a lot of staff to you, but in actual fact, if I tell you there are about 300 YWAMers in England and Wales, that maybe will put it into perspective for you that in those 15 countries, that's how many people we have working. And that's Youth with a Mission, but other missions look very similar on the ground. So even though the Berlin Wall fell, communism fell in this part of the world about over 20 years ago, it's actually still a very pioneer picture in terms of missions and in terms of evangelical churches. Very pioneer on the ground indeed, really. Just want to tell you a little bit about what actually makes this part of Europe different to Western Europe. Now, some of you will be familiar with calling these countries Eastern Europe, but actually, ever since the wall fell, these countries have really thought of themselves as Central Europe, not Eastern. They are not looking east. They didn't invite communism in. They didn't enjoy that period, and they certainly are not looking east now. And they really are looking to have their own identity. And that's one reason why we refer to them as Central Europe. If you go to any of those countries, I can tell you, if you refer to them as Central Europe when you're there, you'll be impressed. You will impress the people that you're talking to. They will like you very much for not calling them Eastern Europe. Let me tell you a bit more about what makes this region a little bit different from this part of Europe, from, say, Western Europe. The Great Schism that happened in 1054, that's the division between what was the Orthodox Church and the Catholic Church. if you like, this part of Europe is a bit like a running fault line. And that division took place and really divided people between being Catholic and being Orthodox, which was the church at the time. There was, I won't go into the details, but a big disagreement, and that disagreement caused that split right through that part of Europe. And then the Ottoman Empire, the Turkish Empire, Islam came, and it was, it occupied most of those European countries, and it was there for 500 years. I don't know if you can maybe comprehend what it would be like to have another group of people come, occupy you, stay for 500 years, dictate your laws to you, dictate how much tax you might or might not pay, but literally take over. And that occupation in places like Albania was 500 years. And it's incredible to me that they actually managed to come out of that time with any identity at all. And if you can, again, think, what would keep you? What would help sustain you and hang on to your own identity during an occupation that lasted that long? You end up being very, if you like, strong about certain things, strong about your nation, about nationhood. And that is something that's still very much there. And even today, you'll find those countries are very nationalistic. And some of this is why. Some of the reasons why. So even somewhere like Hungary, you go to Budapest now, beautiful city. I think the Turks were there for 200, 250 years. Lots of churches were converted into mosques. Really, it's quite, as I said, I lived in Albania for 9 years. When Albanians would talk to me about it, this wasn't so long ago in their heads. It was still very much like it was a part of them now. And I couldn't get my head around what would that really be like to be occupied for that length of time. So the Catholic world, the Orthodox world, and Islam. And when I say Islam, this is historically dating back to when the Turks were there, when people converted. So these Islamic people have been there for a very, very long time. All three of these religions meet there. And when communism fell about 20 years ago, these three really came to the front again. People are holding on to these identities, and that's really what caused a great deal of conflict. I know some of you will be too young to remember that the breaking up of Yugoslavia was a very violent thing, and the Bosnian War happened in about 95 or so, and it was all three of these groups that were fighting with each other. And that sort of animosity, those sorts of divisions have not gone away. They're still very much there. And divisions too that we're unaware of, but if you go there, you soon become aware of. For instance, country that I live in, Hungary, after World War II, because they were on the losing side, the Allies, the winners in World War II, decided that some parts of Hungary would be given to other countries. So Hungary was two-thirds bigger than it is now. Again, hard to imagine, just, yeah, your country's going to be smaller and we're going to give this bit of it to Romania. And that's that, it's over. Well, again, if you go to Hungary and you mention Transylvania, you will touch on a nerve because it used to be Hungary and they would still see it as Hungary, but technically it's Romania. And those sorts of divisions in terms of boundaries, but they're still very real in people's hearts there at this time. These, by the way, the next few slides actually come from a prayer guide for Central Europe. If you're at all interested and you have a memory stick, I can put the prayer guide on the stick for you, leave that with you. It will eventually be on our website, but it isn't at the moment. Now, communism came after the Second World War and really fell about 20 years ago, which is a long time ago now, over 20 years, but it's really left its mark. So I would like to read this to you. I don't know if I can. While communism was in place as a political ideology, its effects were obvious. Now it is no longer the reigning political force, but the influence remains and continues to affect the values of societies. The impact is shown especially strong in areas such as low regard for the rights of individuals and autocratic leadership. And really, although communism fell, a lot of the people that now still govern those countries are old communists. They changed their titles, they became a democratic party in terms of a title, but nothing in terms of how they really function has changed. And they are passing their values on to the next generation. And really, it's still, if you like, communist thinking that's very much in place in a lot of those countries. And economically, it comes as no surprise, really, that they do struggle to know how to make an economy work, because that just, it wasn't something they were used to making work during a communist period. It really is a new thing, but they still function with an old way of thinking. And communism was so all-prevailing, it affected everybody's lives in those countries. So in Albania, for instance, when I first went there, I remember meeting an old man, and he had spent over 10 years in prison because he criticized the bread. You're thinking, why would you spend 10 years in prison because you criticize the state of the bread? Well, because the bread was provided by the state, and to say that the bread was inferior was to say that the state was producing something that was inferior, and actually everything, in theory, that the Communist Party did had to be thought of as perfect. It was ideal. It was wonderful. And to say that they produced substandard bread was a huge criticism. And so he spent over 10 years in prison for something like that. And that could happen at any time to anyone. And in Albania, it was said that maybe one in four people were informers. And if you think about it, something like one in four, you're going to go home today, eat Sunday lunch with your family, friends. How many of you were around the table? If that was a situation in Albania during the communist era, that would mean you'd probably have, if there was eight of you, a couple of informers there. You certainly wouldn't want to say the bread was terrible, just in case. You didn't know who you could trust at any time. And there was deep suspicion, and that deep suspicion is still very much there. People have said to me when they've come to places like Albania or visited me in Hungary that people don't smile a lot. Well, actually, they smile a lot now than when I first went there. But that's one of the reasons. Who can you trust? You certainly don't look with eyes of, like, real joy at the people you pass in the street. No, you keep your thoughts and your face guarded at all times. So it might be a post-communist situation, but it's still has its influence there. Human trafficking. You're all very aware of this topic, I know. So I don't need to say very much about this. But Central Europe, those countries either fall into country of origin, particularly for girls, or a transit nation. You might not be aware of this, but the traffickers are gearing up for the 2012 Olympics in London. It's not called organized crime for nothing, and those are the people that organize this. They are organized. So because there are so many thousands of people coming into the UK next year for the Olympics, they are gearing up for that many people. They're gearing up to get as many trafficked girls in particular here in the UK. That's something to pray about. It's a terrible trade right now that they might even be wanting to increase that to target these games is just a terrible, terrible thing. And I still find it incredible that girls will get sucked into this. But the very people that tell them they have a job for them or they can get them work somewhere are people, again, that they trust, friends of the family, people that they think it's all right, they're really going to do what they say, and they fall into a situation where they cannot get out of. I won't go into details about how it all works. I know that Julian's son has been involved with Stop the Traffic, and I'm sure maybe others of you know information about that. But the whole trafficking thing is a really, really awful thing, but very much happening at this time. Abortion, out of control. During the communist period, abortion was the main form of contraception. And now that communism is well and truly gone, it's still the main form of contraception. Again, I'm sure you can't read that. Let me just read what it says for you. Romania has the second highest abortion rate in the world, and probably in the Western world. It's not unknown for women in Central Europe to have multiple abortions. And then there's a list of the countries here. Those that are underlined are in Central Europe. So Belarus, Bulgaria, Czech Republic, Hungary, Poland, Moldova, Romania, Russia, Slovakia, and the Ukraine have the highest estimated abortion rates in the world. In 2003, there were more abortions than live births. Again, just that dates back to a thinking that's well and truly, communism has well and truly fallen in theory, but these values are very much rooted there. There's a real disregard for human life in these nations. And I think this is a result of some of what I've been telling you, a spirit of hopelessness. When you talk to people, very often they will feel like, well, what could possibly change our situation? And as Christians, we know there is only one thing that really does bring hope. But these nations, in so many ways, find it hard to know what can really bring hope to them. They thought when the era of communism came to an end, they thought that looking west, materialism, all the things that the West had, would really bring all the changes they ever hoped for. Well, they're beginning to see that that is not the case. But they really feel now, well, where could our hope possibly lie? When the countries first opened up, a lot of them were very open to the gospel. That has changed. They're not so open. Because they started seeing materialism as the answer. But that's now coming to an end as they see that actually, yeah, crisis, financial crisis, still happen for them. Even though they're no longer under communism, they still have problems. And I believe that it's a time for us to really focus on this part of the world. Just recently, as a mission, we've got together our different regions and have really had a sense, so that we have the different regions, Western, Northern, Central, and also Eastern, which is Russia, Ukraine, those countries. We've got together and really felt like God is saying that actually our focus on Europe needs to be renewed. We really need to look again at nations like these, nations that are on our doorstep, that really are in need of pioneering. Churches pioneered, seeing a work of God really happen in these nations again, to bring hope where a lot of hope has been lost. I just want to tell you about a few people who and some ministries happening in YWAM in some of these places. This is Serbia, and Serbia has very few churches. South of Belgrade. So quite a few evangelical churches in the north, but there in the south, very little happening. And I took a prayer team to this town here, Užice, a few years ago. Change of slide. Yeah. And this is the city actually of Užice. And I was told, this is the reason we went there to pray, that there were no believers in that city. I found it incredible. And I worked in Albania, where there were no churches in a lot of places. But to stand and look down on this city and think there are no believers? Incredible. So we prayed for Užice. And a little while later, a couple of years later, a couple that work with us, this is Chris and Miriam Klopp, they're Dutch, decided to move to Užice to start or try and plant a church there. So they're there right now. They've been there 2 years, and they have about 5 believers that they've seen come to the Lord. And they are the only born again believers that we know of in that city. This is the middle of Europe. I think that's quite extraordinary. So Chris and Miriam have had many teams go and visit them. They've had a lot of discouragements. I won't go into all of that. But they are really faithful, and they're really, really excited about the 5 people that they have seen come to the Lord. And they're doing absolutely anything right now as outreach. They're like doing things in clubs, karaoke nights, all sorts of things. 2 of the young men, these two, I know it's a really terrible picture, but these two have come to the Lord. And they are in this Bible study group that they've got going. And Ivica and Danielle, and Chris was leading a Bible study one night on prayer, and these two guys left a little bit late and actually missed their bus home. So this Bible study had been on prayer, so they decided they would try out this praying thing. And they decided to pray that someone would stop and pick them up. They would hitch a lift. Well, you need to know that hitching a lift is not normal. No one would necessarily pick you up, and certainly not late at night, which this was, and certainly not 2 guys. So what they were praying for, really, by praying for someone to stop and pick them up, was actually going to be a miracle if it happened. So I can't remember which one of them, but one of them decided that not only would they pray that someone would stop and pick them up, but actually that it would be 2 beautiful girls. Well, you know, if you're going to go for this prayer thing, you know. So, yeah, I don't know if you can guess, but yes, a car stopped. And yes, 2 ladies stopped to pick them up. So, quite incredible. So, obviously now they are committed to prayer. But I just thought it was brilliant when I heard about it. It's just a great story. So, that was Serbia. This is Bosnia. As I mentioned before, Bosnia had a very violent war there as Yugoslavia broke apart, and those who were Muslim, Catholics and Orthodox basically were fighting each other. People who had lived next door to each other in peace suddenly turned on each other. And the peace agreement that stopped them fighting actually divided Bosnia. So can you see that line running around? It's in 2, basically. So the top bit there is the Republic of Srpska, which is mostly Serbs that live there. And then down in the Federation of Bosnia-Herzegovina, this is mainly Muslims and Catholics. And this is how it was agreed. And Sarajevo, which was really the prize, is in the Muslim and Catholic part, which did not please the Serbs. But that's what Bosnia looks like. And if you go there, if you cross from this part into the other part, you feel the difference. It's like being in 2 different countries rather than 1 country. So talk about divided. And if you find an evangelical church there of 20 people, we're talking big. Very, very small churches. And there in the north, Banja Luka, that's the capital of the Republika Srpska part, we have Belinda, who's working there, and she's been working there many years with a church plant team, and they have a church that has maybe 20, 25 people in it, and that's been over a number of years, and that's been growing, so that's going really well, to put it into perspective for you. And Belinda's South African and really committed to Bosnia. And these are 2 boys in an orphanage that she works in. The orphanage asked her to start a reading program with some of the children. There are about 90 children in this orphanage. And so Belinda was just over the moon that they'd asked her to do this. So she and some volunteers go into this orphanage and have a reading class with these boys. And this particular group of boys, they weren't really interested in reading. They have very little attention given them, and to have these people come and sit with them was great, but that they wanted them to read was like, ugh. So anyway, 3 of these boys really were just a handful. And they only started this reading program in October. And these three boys that were a handful, some of the other volunteers couldn't handle them, so actually Belinda actually took them on. There's only two of them in this picture, but the three of them she has become very close to. And it's amazing. Since October, she's seen such a turnaround in these boys' lives. So from being disruptive boys that no one could handle, they now can't get enough of reading. So they swap their books between each other, between the reading classes. And now David, I think he's the one in blue, he actually went out and bought his own book with some money that we're not quite sure where he got the money from. But couldn't wait, went out and bought his own book. So Belinda is just really excited to see such a change in those boys' lives, and she feels so excited at the idea that, yeah, she could have this sort of input and more. They are blank sheets at this point, these children, and it's just wonderful that they are really open to Belinda being a church worker and working there in the orphanage with them. This is a scripture that you're all very familiar with, I know. But this is what I want to leave you with, really. That this part of Europe has very, very few missionaries, missionary attention, missionary interest, or any interest of any sort from the outside, really. And to see some of those real issues change, it needs prayer, and it needs people on the ground. We were asked to help get girls back to some of the countries where they'd been trafficked from. And we actually had no one on the ground there to help. And we're one of the bigger missions around, and we had no one. That isn't a situation I find really easy to handle, but there are so few people working there, and that number needs to go up. And these words were true when Jesus said them, and these words now are true. Very much so, and very much so for this part of Europe. So I want to leave it with you and pray that, you know, in a few years it will not be still this pioneer. So long after communism has fell, we have access to this nation, but it's still very much a pioneer situation. So pray that the Lord of the harvest would send workers into this harvest field. Amen. Thanks.